Almost 100 years ago, one of the most moral, integral, and charitable presidents to ever hold office was born. James Earl Carter, or better known to the world as Jimmy, has broke the record of longest presidential retirement, longest lived president, oldest living president, and longest presidential marriage. He is also one of 4 presidents to have received a Nobel Peace Prize. Sound impressive? I agree. That's why we're going to cover him in today's episode. From his life as a peanut farmer to chief of the United States, I have you covered to be a Jimmy Carter expert. I'm your host, Rachel Payton, and you're listening to the Chronicles of Tom. James Earl Carter Jr., or Jimmy, was born nearly 99 years ago, on October 1, 1924, in Plains, Georgia. He would become the first president of the United States to be born in a hospital, but he would be brought to a home with no electricity or indoor plumbing, and wouldn't get it until he was 14 years old. His ancestors had been in Georgia since after the American Revolution, and his family was prosperous. Jimmy's father, Earl Carter, was a farmer and businessman who employed much of the town. Lillian Carter, Jimmy's mother, was a nurse. Earl was more conservative and content with maintaining the system of segregation set in place at the time, whereas Lillian was more empathetic and would tend to both white and black families, something vastly unheard of in rural Georgia at the time. Jimmy was the oldest of 4 children and would be given the nickname Hotshot by his father. During the day, he would go to a segregated school, and at night he would sit around the radio listening to sports programs and the news. He and the family would have dinners, most ingredients fresh from the farm, and while eating, they would read. But when he wasn't in school, a young Jimmy would work hard on the farm. He would go on to boil and sell the peanuts he would get, and by the age of 13, he had enough money to purchase 5 tiny homes around Plains and rent them out to local families. This kind of drive and determination would remain with Jimmy throughout his entire life. Jimmy's sister, Ruth, had a friend named Rosalind, and she became quite smitten with Jimmy, 3 years older than she. The two had met when Jimmy was just 3 years old. Lillian, Jimmy's mother, had delivered Rosalind and brought her toddler to visit the newborn. But Jimmy and Rosalind would meet again and have big plans in their future. Jimmy had always dreamed of leaving Plains and seeing the world. His uncle Tom was in the Navy and often sent postcards to a young Jimmy, showing him of his journeys around the world. Even though Atlanta was less than 200 miles from him, Jimmy said it felt as distant as Russia. So he would plan on joining the Navy, even writing the academy for a catalog when he was young. Once graduating high school, he tried to be admitted to the academy, but was told to wait another year and try again. So in 1941, he decided to go to Georgia Southwestern to study engineering, but transferred to Georgia Tech in 1942. By 1943, he was appointed to the Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland. There, he would thrive. He would work on the nation's first nuclear-powered submarines and received a Bachelor of Science degree and graduate 60th out of a class of 820. Rosalind would go visit Jimmy at the academy with his parents, and after just their first date, he told his mother he was going to marry her. And he would go on to do just that on July 7th, 1946, only 2 weeks after Jimmy had graduated from the Naval Academy. Jimmy was 21 and Rosalind was 18. Both were virgins when they wed, and within a year, they welcomed their first son. Altogether, the Carters would go on to have 4 children, 3 boys and 1 girl, Jack, Chip, Jeff, and Amy. And during his time in the Navy, Jimmy served in many states like Hawaii, New York, California, and Virginia, just to name a few. Rosalind was keeping up with her ever-changing life while maintaining a growing family, but through all the busyness, they were happy and content. While working on submarines, Jimmy received news that his father was dying of cancer. He knew he had to return home and run the farm. Without even consulting Rosalind, he decided they were moving. This, for good reason, absolutely infuriated Rosalind. She even threatened keeping her and the kids up north. And to Rosalind's point, He was making her move to a town still deeply rooted in segregation. When John F. Kennedy was assassinated, Jip's teacher would go on to simply say, "Good." Jimmy would be discharged from the Navy, but he entered the Navy Reserves, where he would serve for 8 years. He, Rosalind, and the kids would live in military housing when they returned to Plains. This makes Carter the only president to have lived in subsidized housing. And in 1954, he was down on his luck when his farm profits from the crops were a mere $187 due to a drought that had hit Georgia. But the Carters eventually thrived, just as his parents had years ago. Jimmy decided to enter a life of politics in 1962 when a seat in the Georgia Senate opened up. At first, it was believed he had lost the Democratic primaries for the election, but word came out that his opponent had stuffed the ballot boxes with his name and was then out of the race. Carter then went on to win the election. He then had a sight set on being governor of Georgia. He ran in 1966, but would lose this race. This would be the only time Carter would lose until his crushing defeat in 1980. He decided to run again in 1971 and won this time. He became the 76th governor of Georgia on January 12, 1971. To the shock of everyone, Carter said while being sworn in as governor, "I say to you quite frankly that the time for racial discrimination is over. Our people have already made this major and difficult decision. No poor, rural, weak, or black person should ever have to bear the additional burden of being deprived of the opportunity of an education, a job, or simple justice." And he truly meant the words he spoke, because under Governor Carter, the number of African-American staff members in Georgia's government increased by 25%, and he had a portrait of Martin Luther King Jr. hung up in the state's capital, which was a big deal at the time. And he was pretty popular among the celebrities, too. He had Bob Dylan and Greg Allman visit the governor's mansion, some friends that are good to know when he decided to run for president. He was still governor when he decided he was going to run. The year was 1972, but he and his team had to keep it a secret that he was running because it wasn't even close to the 1976 election. And at this point, Carter didn't even realize he'd be campaigning against President Gerald Ford, because he had yet to become our president since the Watergate scandal hadn't even gone public. When he told his mother he was going to run, she simply asked, "Of what?" And he was met with the same reaction from the public when he announced he was running for president. A Georgia newspaper even printed, "Jimmy who was running for what?" There were a lot of other Democrats running, many of them more well-known than him. But his two-year-long campaign would change that. Carter visited over 40 states and gave over 200 speeches. Often, while on the campaign trail, he would stay in the homes of supporters and always making the time to talk to the host. This strategy worked extremely well. He saved money on the campaign trail, and people would glow about how kind and thoughtful candidate Carter was. The televised debates between Jimmy Carter and Gerald Ford was the first since John F. Kennedy and Richard Nixon debated in 1960, 16 years prior. Americans were already unhappy with Gerald Ford because he had pardoned President Nixon right after the Watergate scandal, so it was easy for Carter to work off that. He painted Ford as an extension of Nixon, but Ford portrayed Carter as a know-nothing Democrat. But ultimately, I believe it was Carter who shot himself in the foot and did the most damage while campaigning. In 1975, Carter was asked to do an interview with Playboy. He agreed and has since been the only president to have done an interview with the infamous magazine. The interview went terribly and is still an embarrassment when looked at after all these years. Carter said in the interview, "And Christ set some impossible standards for us. Christ said, 'I'll tell you that anyone who looks on a woman with lust has already committed adultery. I have looked on a lot of women with lust. I've committed adultery many times.'" While Jimmy knew what he meant, the rest of the world didn't quite understand. His opponents would mock him by saying, "Jimmy Carter for Playmate of the Year." And Gerald Ford had been asked to do an interview with the magazine and said no, making it all the worse. As for Rosalind, well, she was never worried, saying, "Everybody thought I ought to be upset, but it didn't bother me because I trusted him enough to not worry about it." And if we're going to be honest, I think Jimmy Carter is one of the few presidents who hasn't strayed from his marriage. I personally think the interview went so bad because of Carter's seemingly self-righteousness. If Trump said that today, would it even make the news? People just didn't expect that kind of behavior from Jimmy Carter. Despite the interview, he still managed to win the 1976 election on November 2nd, 1976. He won by 297 electoral votes to Ford's 241. His victory margin came from African Americans who thought they were hurting under President Ford. For his vice president, Carter chose Walter Mondale, a United States senator from Minnesota. And Carter made history by being the first governor elected to the presidency since Franklin D. Roosevelt in 1932, and was the first president to come from the Deep South since Zachary Taylor in 1848. He was also the last Democratic president to win for 16 years, and the last one who would win the majority of the popular vote until Obama was elected in 2008. At 52 years old, Jimmy Carter, our 39th president, was inaugurated, which occurred on January 20th, 1977, and was memorable for many reasons. It was the last inauguration for a generation not to be a donor event. And Carter would go on to give one of the shortest addresses on record. And he made the bold and historic move of walking to the White House from the Capitol after the inauguration with Rosalynn and 9-year-old Amy. The act brought witnesses to tears. They felt like the new president was one of them. Jimmy Carter wasted no time getting to business. On day one, he fulfilled a campaign promise of pardoning people who avoided the Vietnam draft. At first, he was well-liked and his approval rating hit 75% at its highest. But it didn't last long. He wasn't portrayed well by the media, and people found him aloof and arrogant. But despite all that, Carter did important things while in office, like revolutionizing the vice presidency by keeping Mondale in the know and giving him his own office in the West Wing, a tradition still done today. And as it should be, the vice president should be at a moment's notice to the president. Carter also created the Department of Education, expanded the national parks, and led a 65-nation boycott on the 1980s Olympics due to the Soviet Union invading Afghanistan. But perhaps his greatest accomplishment was mediating the secret 12-day negotiations between Egypt and Israel. The negotiations led to a historic peace treaty between the two nations in 1979. And while in the White House, he and Rosalynn maintained an extremely close marriage, having lunch together every Tuesday. Carter described his wife as his best friend and chief staffer. Due to him wearing cardigans in his televised addresses to the nation, he would peg the nickname Jimmy Cardigan, looking a whole lot like Mr. Rogers. And my personal favorite story of the Carter administration is when Jimmy invited Willie Nelson to the White House, and somewhere along the night, Willie ended up on the roof smoking a joint with Carter's son, Chip. But for all the good times, Carter had plenty of bad too. Inflation had risen to 13%, and people blamed him. And when Iran's former disgraced leader, the Shah, was overthrown, Carter allowed him to come to New York to receive cancer treatment. This outraged Iranians, thinking Carter was trying to return the Shah to power. A group of Islamic students seized the United States Embassy in Iran on November 4, 1979. They held American hostages for the next 444 days. The hostages would be blindfolded and paraded in front of cameras often. And Carter's number one priority was bringing the hostages home. In April of 1980, Carter sent helicopters to rescue the hostages, but the operation failed terribly. Due to sandstorms the day of the mission, the helicopter crashed and 8 servicemen ultimately died. This all made the president look beyond terrible and weak. It wasn't until the same day that Ronald Reagan was inaugurated when the hostages were released. Is this a coincidence or not? Well, suspicions have been raised over the connection between the Reagan administration and Iran, but there has been no hard evidence to indicate any wrongdoing. The Iran hostage situation couldn't have come at a worse time for Jimmy Carter. While campaigning for the 1980 presidential election, Ronald Reagan insulted Carter daily on how he was handling the situation. He had the catchy line of, "Recession is when your neighbor loses his job. Depression is when you lose yours. Recovery is when Jimmy Carter loses his." And during a debate, Reagan brilliantly asked Americans the question, "Are you better off than you were 4 years ago?" To many, the answer was no. Reagan defeated Carter, and Carter left the office with a 34% approval rating. The only presidents to have had worse are Harry Truman and Richard Nixon. Jimmy Carter didn't even wait for the polls to close before conceding to Ronald Reagan. He knew the presidency was over. Once he left office, he and Rosalynn would go on to create the Carter Center, located in Atlanta, Georgia. The Carter Center is a nonprofit fighting for human rights, human suffrage, and fighting diseases. His presidential library is also located in Atlanta and holds records from his administration. He would serve as an ambassador of the United States and would negotiate on behalf of the country, traveling to over 140 nations. He even has a submarine named after him, the USS Jimmy Carter. And in 2002, he was given a Nobel Peace Prize for his life of political accomplishments, becoming the fourth president to receive one. But during the Bush administration, Carter was highly critical of Bush's decision in the Iraq War. Carter also believes there needs to be an age limit on the presidency and doesn't believe he would be able to manage the job after 80. But in the years of his retirement, he has mastered woodworking, painting, writing, and being a fly fisherman. That's only to name a few. He has broke the record for the longest marriage, retirement, and is the oldest president. In 2015, he had a brush with skin cancer, but tried a new treatment that left him cancer-free. And him and Rosalind are somewhat the face of Habitat Humanity. They have done an immense amount of work there, well into their 90s. But the Carters are on their last chapters of their lives. In May of this year, the Carter Center announced that Rosalind has dementia, and Jimmy is in hospice care. But they live in their modest home in Plains, Georgia, where they will happily live out their days. Jimmy Carter has asked President Joe Biden, one of his first supporters, to deliver his eulogy at his funeral. But may Jimmy Carter have the happiest and peaceful days surrounded by the ones he loves. Today, nearly every Washington hotshot wants to be an outsider, but Jimmy Carter was the real thing. Peanut farmer to president. It couldn't have been a more perfect match for the 1970s. But was Carter morally too good for Washington? Was he a good man simply in over his head? Because let's be honest, Jimmy Carter is one of the finest men to have held the position of president. Was he just not cutthroat enough? No matter the reason, he surely redeemed himself in the decades after he left the White House. Our 39th president is a gem. Jimmy Carter, thank you for your lifelong service to the nation. And thank you all for listening to this episode of the Chronicles of Time. If you liked it, leave a rating or review and tell all your friends. We have mugs and t-shirts available for purchase. Just holler at me. If you have any episode suggestions or simply want to talk history, email me at thechroniclesoftimepodcast@gmail.com. My new YouTube series, Cooking Through History, is up on the podcast's YouTube channel. This week we bake signature 70s dishes in honor of President Jimmy Carter. Follow my Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more updates. I'm your host, Rachel Payton, and thank you for listening to the Chronicles of Time.